Would you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Ty Richards.
You are the future of rock. You do it all on your records. This is your debut album. You are rebelling against an old, good old yuppie ad agency self. That came from somewhere. We'll get to that. And you're not new at this, but it is the first record. But I also know you've written a ton of songs.
I claim to be a Texan, but I was actually technically born in Detroit. I was only there, you know, till age 3-ish. My parents split up, and it wasn't a see your dad on the weekends kind of divorce. It was a traumatic mom kidnapping her two kids to get her away, you know, to get away from crazy dad situation. I don't want to throw anyone under the bus or anything, but yeah, it did not end well, and it did not end with me having any sort of relationship with my father. That's, you know, always been something that's kind of followed me around my whole life. But, you know, I was lucky enough to, my mom remarried when I was about 8. And
so you had the stepdad.
Yeah. My actual last name is not Richards. Richards is my adopted last name from, I consider him my dad. I don't even use the word stepdad because I consider my stepdad my dad. My original last name is Hoffman. One time in my whole life after that have I seen him. It was for like a 3-day period. Me and I have a brother who's about a year younger than me. We went, I was 21 years old, and we went and stayed with him for a weekend and kind of met him again and then never saw him again.
So you have no idea where he is or what he's doing.
I pretty much know where he is. I think he still probably lives in Michigan. It was just kind of, you know, he's a fine guy. It's just kind of like meeting a crazy uncle or something. I mean, he's not crazy or anything now, but I would just say like there was just nothing there.
You talk a lot about how bands from the 60s and 70s made records. And you talk about the fact that back then there wasn't this idea of aiming a Neumann microphone at you know, one of those things over there. I'm pointing at an amplifier for the audience who are not watching. And just plugging in directly. And that gives a whole different sound. So you took a fuzz pedal and you said, now, how did you know how people in the 60s and 70s made records? Were you geeky when you were younger and you've studied all of this and kind of become obsessed with it as you were developing your music?
Yeah, I guess, kind of spent a lot of time just over the years studying, especially when it comes to the Led Zeppelin and the rock world. I grew up a rock and roll kid. Like, I loved rock and roll. I couldn't, you know, there's some few like 90s pop exceptions in there that I did love, but I read Guitar World, and I you know, had the guitar magazines, and just my life was guitar growing up. It was guitar, 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 rock, rock, rock. And yeah, I think I remember reading something about, I think I've read multiple stories of Jimi Hendrix recording, or not Jimi Hendrix, Jimmy Page recording Black Dog, the first track on Led Zeppelin 4, which is the first, yeah, it's the first album that I ever got. My dad got it for me for Christmas.
That'll be 1970-ish?
Yeah, yeah. And so for me it was 1998 or something that I got that. Right. And so, but that was my first exposure to Led Zeppelin, and yeah, I couldn't understand how that guitar sound is just such a great sound.
It's very clean.
It's clean. He's doubling it. He's got two guitars going in there, but it's got this crispiness that I could never explain until I read that article about him just plugging it right into the board and then just cranking the preamp on the board until it just has that fuzzy crispiness to it. And yeah, I just like to steal things from the past. You know, I'm really not above stealing things from people that are awesome. Yeah, I read a book by a guy named Austin Kleon. It's called Steal Like an Artist. And that really was a big catalyst for this record, because he talks about how people are bad at copying anyway. So even if I tried to make another Led Zeppelin record or another Beck record or another whatever album, people suck at copying. So it's going to, it's never going to sound exactly like Zeppelin or exactly like Beck or exactly like any of these artists. And so there's kind of no harm in copying, I think.
Well, and we're going to go completely out of order and work our way back. But the decision of how you recorded this, so let me go way back, because you play a lot of instruments. How many instruments do you play?
I guess I never counted, but guitar, you know, acoustic, electric, bass, drums, piano, synthesizer. I count as its own instrument. It's not, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I toyed around with folk. I've written a lot of. I have a whole like back catalog of folk stuff. So, you know, banjo, mandolin, that kind of stuff too. I probably have 3 or 4, maybe 5 records worth of music that was never released because I was an idiot and I didn't know.
Where did you learn to play all these instruments?
I guess I was part of the scene in Denton, Texas. Denton, there's kind of this, some people in Texas call it mini Austin, right. But it's kind of this, it's just north of Dallas and it's a college town. It's where I went to school. Went to the best music, one of the best music colleges in the nation, and I didn't study music. I took a couple music classes, but I actually went there for design and art direction. That's what I went to school for. But yeah, there's this whole scene though of Denton artists, guys like Midlake and you know, and Nora Jones is out of there. I never really knew Nora Jones, but she was out of there. Sarah Jaffe. I was kind of acquaintances with all these people, and there's this kind of scene. It was kind of just this indie rock, kind of Americana, kind of I don't know. Yeah, it was just kind of part of that scene, and everybody there. I don't know. I guess it's not that they were multi instrumentalists, but when somebody's playing a banjo, I'm like, oh, cool, and then I would just save up, buy a $400 banjo, and learn how to play the banjo. Yeah.
You made a definitive choice. You did play all these instruments, but you still didn't go into a big studio to do it. And a lot of these instruments, if you were an all in the box project, if you were 100% in the box and you were all synth, that you do in a bedroom. But recording drums, recording all that other stuff, that's not so easy to do DIY. So you made this decision, I would imagine, based on budget?
Actually, no, really not. Budget wasn't really a part of it at all. It was more, I mean, that kind of fits into it. It's kind of nice that seems like it would be cheaper, but I actually still ended up spending a good amount of money just because I needed gear. There's gear that I didn't have that I had to buy to make this record.
You have to buy good microphones to record those drums.
Right. Well, and I'm going to throw myself under the bus here. I'm going to like lose so much respect in like the band indie scene, but check this out. Most of these songs started out as demos, and I bought my first drum set before I made this record, and I bought my first bass before. I've played those things, but I've never owned my own drum set or owned my own bass. I went and bought an old Ludwig and bought it like a 79 P bass, and I wrote most of these songs started out as a drum part. But you're right. How do you record drums in a house with? I didn't have very much money.
Drums are the hardest thing to record.
So get this. I bought some software that I thought, you know, these are just demos. So I'm just gonna track these. I'm gonna sequence these just for now. I'm gonna sequence them. I had Abbey Road's drums, and I sequenced them, and. They sounded all right, and so I just kept them in there. And later on, I decided to not record drums. I kept pretty much everything on this entire record is very meticulously mixed to be real drums, but not real drums, except for the last song. My buddy Justin Anthony played drums on that one song. He's like the only other human on the album. But yeah, I guess I'm outing myself here, but I didn't do real drums on the record, and that feels shameful. It's like a band.
Not at all. Because I
hide that from people. I think I've lied to people about that.
So you have these demos, you make this thing. Now I listen to it on really good headphones, and I've listened to it in a really good studio. So I know how good it sounds. I also know what mastering engineers are capable of taking, but they have to have something good enough to start with. So obviously you chose him because he did things that you liked and you liked the sound of, and you wanted more of what he was capable of doing. Were you there for the mastering?
I wish I was, but I actually was.
You sent it to him?
I sent it to him, but we went through multiple revisions because this record was weird. I think even for a guy as accomplished as Brian Lucey, I mean, he did Black Keys Brothers. He's done some epic records. He's done Arctic Monkeys. The list goes on. He's insane. But even for a guy as experienced as him, the first email that I got back from him was, he just was kind of taken back by the variance of dynamics. It was there's some pretty extreme, the way that he worded it was, some of the songs have a 5 decibel difference at
he wanted to, and his job as a mastering engineer is to make it all sound smooth.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's tasteful about it. He's not just going to squash everything to death to where it like fits. And that's what he was telling me. He's like, just so you know, I'm not going to squash this. I won't, it's not what I do. I don't squash tracks to make
sense. Well, he's used to very loud stuff.
Yeah, and this is very loud, but it's almost like, I don't know if you've listened to like any of Jeff Buckley's records, but it's like there's parts of it where it's just like whispering and you kind of got to crank your stereo up and then it just gets crazy loud and it's all over the place. It's almost like it wasn't even mastered. My stuff, there are parts of the songs where I really intentionally made the guitar very loud. I wanted it to be where for a guitar, for someone who loves rock, they're like, yes. And maybe someone who doesn't love rock, they're gonna be like, turn this thing down. They're probably thinking that, but
yeah, it's pretty forward. But what's interesting is you handed him a mix, right? Because the drums are also very forward and the bass is very forward. And when you come right down to it, because there's a lot of low end in this thing. This thing, rattles speakers on certain things. So when you come right down to it, what you handed him is only two things. Everything very forward or everything very quiet.
Yeah, this is also the first record I've ever mixed. So I've backseat mixed a ton of
them. You mix it on Pro Tools?
Yes, I did. And I'll caveat that with this next record I'm looking at doing straight to tape and trying to mix all on tape for the second record. But
just bouncing tracks.
Yep. So like nothing would touch Pro Tools except for just the stereo mix.
The idea of how you write and melody being forward and lyrics not coming until pretty much when everything else is in place. Yeah. So is that why everything kind of fits like a glove? Because you can do the nonsense stuff and work on the melody, and then when the lyrics are there, you've got enough bass, and I don't mean the instrument, obviously, but enough bass to make it all that tight?
Yeah, the song is pretty much done from pretty much 90% of the songs on the record, most of the songs on the record. The song is done before I even think about vocals. I mean, the musical, the instrumental part of it. My goal is to make a song that I could release as an instrumental and it would still be good. And I've talked about this on other shows. It's no news to anyone probably, but I do the whole mumble track thing. I stole the idea from Jeff Tweedy, and that's like my nerdy thing I like to talk about. But what I think would rather talk about is like how bored I was of writing songs the standard old way. It was so boring to me. Just sit down with a guitar, sit down with a guitar, get a pen and paper and write down lyrics and try to come up with something profound. And oh yeah, that's really profound. That's the one, and really well thought out. I was kind of done with that. And I kind of just like had to step back and say like, I don't really have anything that interesting to say in my conscious mind. So I had to.
Well, wait a minute. You mean you got strippers, you got marriage, you got exes, you got family life, you got all these.
Yeah. But I just got done. I was done kind of writing. I've written songs my whole life that are just, I take myself too seriously. If I'm really thinking about a song, it ends up coming out like philosophical or almost like preachy. And I was done with that. I wanted to be a real artist. And this is to me the the first set of songs. I've written, you know, a couple hundred songs before these songs came about. And these are the first batch of songs where I really felt like an artist, where I was making art, where I'm just mumbling into a microphone with a really solid melody and then just translating my mumbles to whatever I think I'm hearing. It's more of a Freudian, just throw a bunch of spaghetti at the wall kind of way of writing lyrics. And it seemed more Jackson Pollock-y, like not... I don't know. It's
not paint by numbers.
It kind of removes my ego from the situation where I'm kind of getting to the deeper, darker side of myself. And I think I maybe still have some deeper, darker stuff that I have to explore. But this is just, you know, round one of that.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. Okay. And what that is two of your songs on the outside. And then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.